Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and 30-year business coach. Listen in as amazing, world-changing authors, speakers, and coaches share their struggles and victories and hear from best-selling authors' insight into how you, too, can live your life as a thriving entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur. So glad to have you here with us today, because today we want to talk to you about reality. I mean, what's really real? A lot of times, we take in information through our five senses, what we can see, what we can hear, maybe even we use our brains. You know, if you want to add, what can I think about? What facts do I know? They all go in towards our definition of reality. And because of that, it can often mean that we miss out on bigger things. We have defined life as being whatever it is that you've defined life as being, and that's real. That's reality. A perfect example of that is, that age-old thing that most of us, our parents, told us when we were growing up. You want to get a good education, get a good job, and have a stable life. And most of us at this point, depending on how old you are, but it's kind of interesting because I actually see that millennials more and more, especially the younger ones that are like our Maya's age or, the young 20s, stuff like that, they either didn't grow up with that or they didn't embrace it. I'm not sure, depending on the person, which way it is. But, so there's a real shift away from that concept of you're going to finish school and then work someplace for 30 years and then get a gold watch and retire. And your Social Security is going to be enough to live on for the rest of your life. Most people know, that all of that is really a falsity. It's not true. It's just not real. And yet, especially for our grandparents or our parents' generation, that was what reality was for them. And so we've had to decide, or we've learned often through life that, sometimes what we define as real isn't really the truth. That thing of getting that good job and then life is going to be stable. Having been in the tech industry for as many years as I have, I know so many stories of people who, one day they went to the work and then the next day when they showed up, the building was closed. It was empty, or there was a sign on the door that said, we regret to inform you that we've gone out of business. And it's been, literally just that quickly with no warning. I even was helping a friend of mine out for, I was there for 3 or 4 months, kind of just helping in any way that I could. And I remember him calling me the morning of, and he said, hey, I'm going to be announcing to the whole office that we're shutting down at the end of this week. And he's like, you can come in and continue doing things and get files off of computers or stuff like that. And he goes, but really, I can just pull the hard drive out of the computer and just send it to you, or download to a zip drive and send it to you or whatever, because, that's just what we've decided is best for my wife and my family. And no offense to that. I wasn't upset at all. It was a good move for Mike and his family. But I know what that's like. You don't really plan that. You didn't make your budget for the month based on, now what's the plan when the company goes out of business. I mean, there are other places. I remember, speaking of really dealing with reality, I was sitting in a city council meeting in a little town called St. Helens, Oregon. Kathy and I used to live there. We actually had a Twilight store there. For those of you that are Twilight movie fans, it was a lot of fun. And I was sitting in a city council meeting, and there used to be a big Boise Cascade. Boise Cascade is a wood manufacturing, they mostly make paper company. And Boise had told them a decade ago, hey, we're going to be completely pulling out of town. You know, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, the logging industry, especially in states like Oregon and Washington, is really not profitable anymore. There's so many regulations on them that they just really can't do the logging like they used to do. And they had informed the city almost a decade before that they were on a 10-year plan to move out. And then when they announced that, hey, you know, it's 2 years, we will be completely gone from town, everybody was shocked. They were like, how could that possibly be? You know, I mean, what are we going to do now? It's, you know, I forget what it was, but it was like 60 or 70% of the, you know, income base of, you know, of that particular city. And they hadn't really dealt with the reality of that over the course of the decade. They just assumed that, you know, something would come up or they would change their mind or it wasn't real. And we all do that. Some things it has to be. Driving is one of those perfect examples of ways that you really just kind of have to not deal with reality. Because the reality of it is you don't have any control of that person driving in the car next to you. They can go crazy and decide to crash into you or whatever, and there's just nothing that you could do about it. And so when we drive down the road, we assume that you know, that it's going to be okay, that that person's going to stay in their lane and we're going to stay in our lane and we're all going to share the highway together. And, you know, and of course that doesn't always happen. And that's, of course, why accidents happen. But we can't live in that space. You know, there'd just be no way to drive if, you know, if you were looking at each person as potentially being the next person that's going to pull themselves into your lane. And so, of course, you know, it's a perfect example of not really embracing what's real. And so some of you are probably wondering, it's like, okay, well, this is a real good discourse on, you know, what's really truly real and stuff, but what does that have to do with my life and business, Steve? Why are you going on and on about reality? I'm very in touch with reality. and the reason why is because today I want to present to you a couple more best-selling authors, and they've got amazing books that really truly do deal with how to be able to view reality. But I wanted to challenge you in this first little segment here, you know, kind of my time for each show, to really challenge you to take a real look, a real hard look at what is really, truly real in your life. You know, some of you that saw the last movie in the Hunger Games series, at the very end of it, because of all the psychological torture, you know, the one kid says to now his wife, spoiler alert, sorry, you know, you love me and you want to be with me, real or not real. And she says real. And, you know, those are the kind of things that are real. The love of our wife and our children and those kind of things. Other things we grasp a hold of as being real. But I challenge you today, take a minute and look at the things that you've defined as real, that you hold on to so desperately. So, you know, you've got like a death grip on it because this is what has to be real. I challenge you, take a minute today and really just evaluate both what's real as well as what's really important. What are the things that we do in our business that are important? There's an old saying, and you know, I'm sure you've heard it before, that you as a business owner should do only the things that only you can do. And as we first start out, you know, that's not possible to just you know, pass off to somebody else all the things that aren't in our unique brilliance. But as you grow your company, you want to more and more move to a place where you're doing only the things that only you can do, and you're empowering other people to show up brilliantly in your company. And, you know, allow that person who has a real talent with accounting or a real talent with systems or managing people or those kind of things, allow them space in your company to really show up. And that's when our companies really, excuse this phrase, really get real, is because now we're not defining ourselves as the solution for every single thing that happens in our company. We've gotten real enough with ourselves to go, hey, I am really good at whatever that particular thing is. And the other stuff, I'm really good at empowering somebody else to be the solution for that thing so that they too can shine their unique brilliance and my company can be better because of it. So I challenge you today, as you're listening, to really start thinking about what things are real and what things are things that I've been holding on to that now it's time to let go of. I want you to think about that, and we'll be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur.
You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to wehelpyouthrive.com, check us out, and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome back. Appreciate having you here with us. Today we're talking about reality. We're going to take a hard look at what is real and how we can bring more and more into focus in our lives. The things that are real. And by that I mean what's really important. What can we do to have the best life, the best business every day? You know, and really live as a thriving entrepreneur. I really hope that you're ready to take in some reality and begin to really ask yourself the question.
Reality. So what is reality, really? I mean, we see things, but do we see things? So today we want to talk about approaching reality through mindful photography, an amazing new book that's coming out, and to help us with that, an incredible photographer, but also a really good friend, Ryan Morrison. Ryan, thanks for being with us here today.
Oh, Steve, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So I want to touch on right up front here a little bit about the concept of reality, because I think we live in the world, but we miss it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you approaching the reality?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many visual things that we see all day long. I mean, from our reality is what we see, it's what we feel, it's what we touch, it's what we taste, it's how we perceive this world, you know. And I think there's this idea of reality and how we approach reality, I think, is really an interesting time right now, because we really, I mean, what's actually happening in our lives is one thing. And there's this other kind of element on how we craft a reality. And we look at how, you know, we want to be perceived maybe on social media or on, you know, on Instagram or Facebook or anything like that. There's this more perfect version of yourself, I think, that we want to show people. And then there's this other reality that we live. And I think bridging that gap is kind of an interesting place to be. But then also, I think, you know, what we view all day long on these social media platforms is this kind of fake reality that people also, you know, want to perfect it, that maybe they're showing pictures of their, you know, baby that's not necessarily how it actually looks. And maybe they picked up just before they took the picture. And so you think that their house is clean all the time when it's really not. And I think that we, you know, there's this kind of struggle right now with where we're at in our culture with that reality. And I think that you know, photography can be more used as a tool to kind of take a step back and to slow down and to be more mindful of what's going on in your own life. And you can use photography as a tool for yourself to kind of figure out and to process what's going on in your own world.
I love that. So, you know, because I know you do it all the time and it's part of what you do, but help a person understand the concept of where you can go and what you can see when you stop and look at the world through that stop frame.
Yeah. I mean, the beautiful thing about where we're at with technology is that we all have such a powerful camera in our pocket already. You know, we so many people on just your cell phone, it's a better camera than what the best digital camera was a couple of years ago. And so the barrier to entry on coming into the game of photography nowadays is we can all be photographers. And I think that that's an interesting concept. And so, but engaging that and just saying, okay, well then if I don't need a fancier camera than the one on my phone, then, you know, where can you go? What can you do with that? It's up to you and the world is yours. But I think what you need to start with is just go wherever you're at, you know, look in the room that you're in or in the, or outside of the room that you're in, go for a walk and just start to look at life a little bit differently. And, you know, there's the art of looking is a little bit different than the art of seeing. And I think once you start looking for things and you start looking for beauty, mm-hmm. I think that's when you really start to find it. And I think that's kind of this beautiful part of what photography can be when you're doing photography for yourself and when you're doing photography for you alone and you do it for the art of it and for the craft of it, then you can craft your own art and you can make your own art. Because I'm not the person that can tell you what's good photography and what's bad photography. There's better tips and tricks for what to do, but art is art as long as you're expressing yourself and you're telling a story through that. And so you can go out and start to find beauty in the things around you. And I think that's such a beautiful life practice as well.
Beauty in the life around you. I mean, and I hope everybody will stop for just a second, wherever you're at, you know, driving down the road or, you know, sitting in your room or at work or whatever. Look at one thing in where you are and see the beauty of that. That's really powerful, Ryan, because, I mean, you're right. We see, but we don't really look at what we're seeing. You know, it just comes in our eyes and goes wherever it goes.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, we're so distracted. There's so much, you know, signal coming in. There's so much noise coming in from the world around us. And I think that we're just so distracted by that. And I think, you know, when you look through a viewfinder on a camera, when you look at, you know, your screen on your phone, when you're taking a photograph, everything else just slows down. Everything else kind of disappears. Because you're intentionally looking at that one thing. And I think if you can do that, even in your relationships, even in your business, even in whatever you're working at, if you can focus on that one thing, not to use a silly photography pun of focusing on it, but I mean, you really can focus on that one thing and find the beauty in that one thing, because the rest of the world doesn't matter just for that moment that you're taking that picture and that you're focusing on that one thing. And you can look for the silver lining because there is beauty in everything. And I think that if you start with that practice of finding that beauty or looking for that beauty even, then you can start, that's a practice of mindfulness and gratitude and being present right there in that moment.
So I want to talk the other direction a little bit with you about it too, because you mentioned early on, you know, there's so much noise with social media and, you know, people are taking pictures of their breakfast cereal and, you know, all
yes.
stuff. What do we do so that, you know, with the ease of our phone camera, that, you know, it doesn't just become blur. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think so. And I love that question. And, you know, I'm not even going to tell people that taking pictures of their breakfast cereal is wrong, you know, but I think that one of the things that I try and focus on, at least in my practice and what I'm doing with photography, when I go out just to take pictures for fun is, you know, there's the art of showing people what happened. And, you know, that's a very, self-focused thing, like, hey, I had this bowl of cereal, or hey, I ate this salad, but you aren't showing the chicken wings you also ate, or the chocolate afterwards, or whatever it is. You know, I think that there's that focus on self and what you're doing and how you present it to the world. And when you post that stuff, I think that's an important thing just to think about what you're sharing with the world. And I think that can kind of show what's maybe important to you. And it's also a really good, I think, bookmark, for your life when you look back at your life a couple years from now. I know there's some apps that let you say, like, 3 years ago you took this picture, and it's kind of fun to see what you took pictures of and what you did. But I think when we come back to not being so distracted by the blur of everyday life and of taking thousands of photos on my phone even, is just to kind of slow down and before you take that photo or during that photo or after the photo, just start to ask why. Like, why did you take that? Or what was important about that? And I think, you know, if we pulled out our phones right now and looked through our camera roll, you have completely different photos than I do. But we can start to see from a big picture, a 10,000 foot view, what's kind of important to us in that. And I think if we can kind of slow down and not necessarily take every picture just to show somebody else what we ate or what we did, just to try and impress somebody that we probably don't even like if we were friends with them in real life, I think if we slow down and we do that stuff intentionally and we start to understand, like, okay, this is important to me because of this, focus in on that a little bit more. And I think you'll start to find that there's surface culture, there's surfacey meaning behind a lot of the images that we take and share. But if we can start to just crack that surface and dig a little bit deeper and start to understand what the core of why we're doing that, the core of our picture. I have a lot of pictures. When I travel, I take a lot of pictures of kids and everyday life. And that kind of, I just got back from El Salvador. And I realized that almost all of my photos that I took were of the kids there. And instead of just saying, oh, they're cute kids and they're fun pictures, let's start to ask questions like, okay, like, I, as a core belief system, really believe in education. And I believe that kids are the future. And if we can, you know, help them, then I think that that's the next generation of a country like El Salvador or our own country here. And I think that that's, we start to understand those deeper meanings when we start to ask the question why and take a more mindful approach to our photography.
Good stuff. So, you know, we won't talk specifically about our ages, although I've told everybody a lot of times that I'm 50. So, you know, no big worries. But neither of us, suffice to say, is 18 or 20 years old anymore.
Right.
But for that generation, and I'm not even critiquing it. It just is what it is. You know, the selfie is so intricately a part of it. And I don't want to take that away from them. You know, is there a little piece of what we're talking about that a person could become a little more mindful, not about, you know, their hair and their makeup and, you know, whatever kind of facial expression they need to make, but about what's actually in the frame that might be able to help them, you know, at the place that they're at.
Absolutely. And I love that question. And I have no problem talking about my age. I'm trying to figure out how old I actually am. So I'm right on the beginning of what people would call that millennial. I've never called myself a millennial. And but I think I would be right on the edge of that. I'm 28, 29 right now, not 30 yet, but I'm right on that edge. And I think it's interesting because I've never really gotten into the quote unquote selfie culture of taking pictures of yourself everywhere. But, you know, I do take pictures of where I'm at. And I think that for me to look at that, I think, you know, I think the question more so, the way that I look through it is are we telling a true story of our experience, or are we trying to prove to people that we were someplace and that we were trying to be, you know, that perfect makeup or the perfect look or the, you know, whatever it is, what story are we trying to tell? And I think the selfie culture for me is interesting because I feel like it's, it used to be a culture of let's take a picture of us in front of something or us with friends. And now it's you taking your own photo there. And I think that, yes, it's much easier. And yes, there's, you know, front facing cameras on our phones now that make it really easy. But I think what it all goes back to is what story are we telling and how are you sharing that experience with other people? And another selfie here and another selfie there, I don't feel like it has as much weight and gravity and context than if you were to approach it from a little bit different way and say, okay, I am here, but what do I see? What do I value in this environment? It's not just the fact that you went on a hike and you took a sweaty selfie. Let's kind of turn that camera a little bit differently and ask the question, what are you experiencing on this hike? What do you see? Why do you find the Grand Canyon beautiful? Or why do you find this tree beautiful or this landscape or whatever it is? And tell that story. And I think that, you know, that kind of goes out of a self-focused selfie culture of just trying to fit in and trying to show something to engage it with a larger idea and a larger fabric of all of us sharing these photos of our own experiences. Because if I went on one trip and I handed everybody the exact same camera, we would all take completely different photos because we see different things and we experience different things. And just like, you know, this podcast or this radio show or anything like that, I think that we really we can learn from other people's stories and we can learn from other people's mistakes and we can learn from other people's wisdom. And that's what we can do once we share, you know, the true story of who we are instead of just trying to be like everybody else and do what everybody else is doing.
Good stuff. So if you had to give one tip, you know, because you're a pro, so you take pictures all the time, especially since most people are going to take the picture with their phone, what's one tip that a person can do to better capture, you know, both the image as well as the moment?
Yeah. I would just say, look first without your camera and really try and be present in the moment and be mindful of what you're looking at already. And start to figure out the story than just showing right away what you see, you know? And I think that that's the most interesting thing. So if I go into, let's say, a room full of people, and I can take pictures of people just, you know, eating or talking or that kind of a thing. But if I walk in and I start to get to know people and I start to ask questions, then I can start to figure out, oh, this person is here because of this. And then the photos start to have more meaning if we start to have that context. And I think that even if I know somebody's story, or you can use this when you're out in nature or whatever it is, if there's something that's important to you and you can start to tell that story, then go. So I would say the first tip is, or one tip is just go learn about what you're doing and look before you look through the viewfinder at your phone. Because I think that what you can start to see when you're looking for this beauty and when you're looking for the stories is you'll start to find that what you're shooting is much more meaningful and much deeper. Instead, because all of us can just go out and we can take pretty pictures and we can do that, but go and travel and start to look without your camera and then start to implement the camera as a tool instead of how you're looking at everything.
Approaching Reality Through Mindful Photography by Ryan Morrison. Amazing book. Our next upcoming best-selling author. Please check it out on Amazon. Ryan, thanks so much for spending some time with us here today.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk with me about something I'm so passionate about. I love it. Thank you.
Have you ever used the phrase, get real? Or have you ever had anybody tell you it's time for a reality check? Well, I encourage you, not in a negative way, not in like a, hey, you know, you're not really, you know, taking things seriously, but just simply in a reality check kind of way to look around. What do you see? What do you hear? Now ask yourself, what's real? What is really important? Is it the Grand Canyon behind you, or is it your wife that's standing in front of the Grand Canyon? And for each person that, you know, that answer is very personal, very individual. But I encourage you to take a moment now and really embrace reality. Embrace all that's around you. And then understand, out of everything, all the noise, all the chaos, all the busyness that is day-to-day life, what is real? What is truly, really, deeply important? I hope you'll take a minute and really think about that today, and you'll identify some things in your life that you want to hold on to because they're what's real. They're what's really important. I know that if you do, it'll help you live as a thriving entrepreneur. We'll be right back.
You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to wehelpyouthrive.com, check us out, and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome back. I really appreciate you listening. One of the things that's really truly real to me is the time that you take, whether this is the first time you've listened or you listen faithfully every single week to the show, the time that you take out to invest in yourself, but to also give to us, to allow us the ability to pour into you information from our best-selling authors, some things to think about, and some ways to just really thrive in your life and business. One of the things that is the most real for me, since that's what we've been talking about this whole episode, one of the things that is the most real for me is how much and how real your time is, how valuable it is. And I really appreciate that you take this time to invest in yourself and to give to us and allow us to be able to help you thrive. Kathy and I love helping you thrive. We love sharing your unique brilliance with the world. And I'm so glad that you're here today because I really do want you to be able to take all of those things that are in your life and be able to now start arranging them into levels of importance and levels of what's real.
There are issues that we have in our life that are medical. They're not things that we ask for. They're not things that we even want, but they are things that affect our lives. Sometimes to the point where we feel like our lives are interrupted. Have you ever felt that way? Well, today we want to talk with one of our best-selling authors about her book, Crohn's Interrupted, and a little bit about that and how it can sometimes interrupt her life. So join me in welcoming Makita. Makita, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thank you.
Yeah. So for people who maybe aren't familiar with what Crohn's is, can you give people just a
you know, 50,000 foot view level of what Crohn's disease is?
Yeah, well, you know, Crohn's disease is, it's a chronic condition that can sometimes be life-threatening. It's debilitating. It can pretty much steal the joy from your life. You know, it's embarrassing. And it's a difficult disease that, that could just pretty much tear your life and your family's life apart. You know, it's due, it's a chronic inflammatory bowel disease that's characterized by inflammation, and it's an immune response to tissue injury that causes swelling and pain in the digestive tract. So sometimes you can either have diarrhea or constipation or constant vomiting. You know, it's really, really a tough disease.
And so is it something that you're born with? Do you develop it? How does that process work?
Well, I'm sure that in some instances you can be born with it. From what I understand or what has been explained to me, it's an autoimmune disease. And what I have learned over the last 30 years is how to manage it, how to live with it, how to navigate the pitfalls of the disease. I've learned how to manage my diet to eat successfully, where it has allowed me to gain weight and to be physically active. Because what the disease does is it really steals your physical ability to be able to do things. You're tired all the time. You can't go out and enjoy a nice meal with your friends. So it's tough.
Mm, yeah, I can imagine. So the book is entitled Crohn's Interrupted. What can we do to interrupt the cycle of something that obviously you didn't choose and you don't have any control over?
Well, I believe that if you live life intentionally, and it will allow you to live life triumphantly. You have to make the decision that no matter what happens, you are going to participate in your life, and that you are going to do all of the things that you set out to do. Now, what Crohn's may do is delay some of those dreams, but it doesn't mean that you give them up. And so what my interest was in writing the book, is my doctors sort of gave different stipulations about what they thought I might not be able to do. You know, I mean, I remember when I could barely walk half a block and I couldn't leave the house because I had to stay close to the bathroom. You know, so it was very depressing. You know, I wasn't having a social life. I wasn't able to participate in fun activities with my friends and family. And sometimes, frankly, I couldn't even perform the basic functions of daily living. But somehow I was able to develop my resiliency muscle over and over. And my doctors convinced me to write my story about how I continued to interrupt Crohn's to accomplish my goals, because they felt that it would really help some of their patients who were struggling with the same thing. So as an inspirational life coach, I just want to let people know that life is not over because you are diagnosed with this disease, or even because you had an ostomy because of it, because we have to just create the new normal and continue to live our life intentionally, one day at a time.
And I love that phrase you just used, create the new normal. Can you give people some insight into what they can do to create a new normal for themselves?
Well, one of the things that I did was I changed my diet. I worked with a nutritionist who actually was diagnosed with Crohn's many, many years ago. And he is out of Columbia University Hospital. And he helped me to develop a specific diet for my condition that has allowed me to be able to gain weight, because that's one of the things that you struggle with Crohn's is to keep weight on. And so he eliminated several things from my diet, such as wheat, soy, yeast, dairy, and together we developed a diet that really worked well for me. And I was even able to develop a whole line of breads that are consistent with my dietary requirements. So if you ask any Crohn's patient, you know, what's the one thing you would love to have? It's a piece of bread. And so I was able to, you know, come up with recipes where it's not just gluten-free, because gluten-free doesn't always mean dairy-free, corn-free, yeast-free, you know, along with all of the other restrictions that I had. So I created this bread, which I kind of taste tested with my friends that are able to eat all varieties of foods, and they seem to love them. And so that's one of the things that I'm going to be able to offer as one of my services.
So a person, I mean, you know, obviously you've got dietary things, lifestyle things that need to change, but my guess would be that the first thing you have to deal with is that whole mental game, that, you know, talk that's going on inside of your head. Can you talk to people a little bit about how they can begin to interrupt the flow of all the things that are going in your mind and create a new normal for yourself mentally?
Well, mentally, it's a big job. I would have to say the first thing you need to do is to accept what's being told to you. And by accepting it does not mean that you're going to let it dictate what you're going to do next. You accept it, yes, but the next thing you have to do is research. You have to find out everything you can about what the doctors are telling you, what the restrictions are, and then you have to determine whether or not you're going to allow that to impact you in a way where you can still function. So things such as my doctors told me, well, you know, you might not want to go to school because that might be too stressful. You might want to wait. And I said to them, well, if I don't go to school, what am I going to be doing? They said, well, you'll be home resting. And I said, well, you know what? I'm going to be in pain whether I go to school or whether I stay home and rest. So I'm going to choose to use this time to go to school, and I'll deal with the pain as it goes along, as it comes along. And so what I found is that as I continued to push through, I had so many different activities that were going on. It took my mind off of experiencing the pain. Not that it went anywhere, mind you, but that I was just able to become laser focused on what the goal was that I was trying to achieve so that I was able to move forward. Sometimes it wasn't as quickly as I wanted to, but I was still able to move forward.
And really, I think that's great advice for everybody. You know, I mean, that laser focus on where are you going and not telling yourself, well, if I didn't get to it in this amount of time, then I'm wrong. But giving yourself the grace to continue moving forward, even, you know, if the time frame isn't exactly what you were thinking.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And I've been going through that since I was a teenager. I mean, I've had so many death sentences with the doctors, you know, it's constant, like, go home and get your papers in order. And I said, no, you know, God has a job for me to do. I'm not ready to go yet. So I appreciate what you're telling me. And I know that this is a difficult situation, but I'm ready for the next chapter.
So, you know, a person comes home from the hospital, from the doctor's office, with a diagnosis of Crohn's disease, or really, you know, there's a whole lot of things that could fit into that same category. What would be the very first thing you would suggest to them to do to really interrupt that and not go down that direction that is so common for people when, you know, news like that hits them?
Well, Steve, I have to tell you, you know, I have this thing where it's called a timed pity party. And I know when, because Crohn's is a chronic disease, you get well, and then you get sick, and then you get well, and then you get sick. And so what ends up happening is you may begin to question, well, what now? What's happening now? And so what I find has helped me is that I will have a pity party. I will complain. I will stomp. I will scream. I will call one of my sisters, who's my sounding board, and I will just say, you know, this really sucks. This is horrible. This is disgusting. I can't believe this is happening again. But I time myself. So I may give myself 15 minutes to get it all out, and then I'm on to solution focused. Okay, so I got this information. Now what am I going to do? Let me get as much information as I can. Let me talk to as many people as I can. Let me have a second opinion if I can. Let me, and you know, so I have this whole list of things, a checklist that I go through. And one of the things that was really helpful to me was that I spoke to my doctor, my gastroenterologist, and I said to him, you know, I want to be a great patient. So one of the things that I want to do with you is partner with you around these things that are happening. And I would go in with my whole list of all of these things that I wanted him to explain. And so it became a partnership and a dialogue where it wasn't just him telling me what to do. We were having a conversation about how we were going to deal with the situation, about how we were going to handle the things that may come up. And so by being proactive, he was able to help me plan things out and sort of come up with a plan as to these are some things that may happen, these are some things that you can expect, and these are some ways that you will be able to handle that. So that I was prepared so that when things happened, it wasn't as devastating as it could be had I not known that it might be coming.
That is really good advice. You know, being prepared so that maybe, you know, it doesn't have to be quite as bad.
Right.
So in our last little bit here before, you know, before we end this segment, I'd like to see you just, you know, say some words of encouragement to people who, regardless of whether they just got the diagnosis or they've had it for years, to help them be able to interrupt their Crohn's. What kind of words of encouragement can you give to them?
I would say that as you wake up today, remember you are created to succeed. You're designed to win. You're equipped to overcome. You're anointed to prosper and blessed to become a blessing. And I am hoping that in writing this book, that I am becoming a blessing to somebody else, that I'm going to help someone who is recently diagnosed or even have had to have some type of ostomy surgery to really understand that life is not over, that we are going to create the new normal and we are going to bring awareness to Crohn's disease and diminish the shame associated with this disease and with having an ostomy. And we're going to show them that we're able to not only live life triumphantly and successfully, but that we're going to live it intentionally. And we're going to honor ourselves by living it one day at a time and knowing that on each day that we're living, that that's a blessing.
The book is called Crohn's Interrupted. It's written by Makita Armour Wade. You can get it now at Amazon. It's a great book, and I really do know that it'll help you out to interrupt your disease and take a different look at it, and then really triumphantly live your life. Makita, thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Oh, you are welcome, Steve. Thank you for having me.
I love this book because, you know, it's the perfect example of what's real and what's really important. It isn't that by really embracing reality in her life that Makita was just miraculously healed. She still deals with the situations in her own life every day, but she's also understood that you can interrupt that by embracing a different view of reality, by looking at things differently. If you remember from an episode, you know, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, look at all the blue that's in your room and now close your eyes and think about what's orange. And then open your eyes up and you begin to see all of the orange that's in your room, you know? And that really, truly is a perfect example of what I'm talking about here when it comes to embracing reality, because it's not that, you know, orange appears in your world. It's not that, you know, that medical diagnosis or the relationship issue you're going through or situations with your children or at work or what have you. It's not that they aren't real. It isn't that they don't exist. It isn't some kind of just will it away kind of thing. But there is most definitely a different version of looking at that reality. There's a saying, and I kind of love it, two of them that I'm actually going to say to you. Number one is sometimes the best lessons in life are wrapped in sandpaper. The only way to get smooth, the only way to be finished is to be scrubbed with that sandpaper and knock off your rough edges. And so it's really important that we understand that sometimes those things are. And the other one is, and I love this phrase, it's that sometimes man's rejection is God's protection. Sometimes the things that hurt the most, the reality of it is that they're there to save us, to protect us from something that would be so much even worse. And so I just encourage you, think through Makita's story. And yes, most definitely get Ryan and Makita's books. They're very helpful in helping us really embrace reality. But then take a look at your own life. Look around and begin to ask yourself, is my definition, is my expectation of what's real, is it really the direction I want to go? Because in the end, you have control over it. You are the one who can learn how to focus on those things that are truly important. Because what you focus on is what grows in your life. So I encourage you, really take some time to be able to focus on what's real and what's really important. We'll be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur.
You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to wehelpyouthrive.com, check us out, and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.
Welcome back to Thriving Entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome back. You know what else is real? This show really goes by fast. You would think that after a couple years now, I'd get to the point where I'm like, yeah, you know, I mean, it is what it is. But it amazes me how quickly our time together goes by. You know, when I'm doing interviews with the authors, prepping them for the show, and speaking with them for the 10, 15 minutes, it just seems like it's a blink. And then putting it all together and edits and stuff like that, it is so amazing to me how quickly our time together goes by. But I am really glad that we got an opportunity to spend this time today together to be able to just think about what's real and what's really important. I hope that you will be able to really embrace that today, that it'll help be a paradigm shift in your life and really give you the opportunity to live the thriving life that you're meant to live. I really do wish that for all of you. Now, all of you know that Kathy and I love helping you thrive. We are here because you have a story. You see, for a lot of years, I hid. I haven't made that story, hidden from people that listen to the show regularly. But I lived for more than a decade as what I can only call as a zombie. I was up walking around and just didn't have the grace, the dignity, the decency to lay down and be dead like I was living. And I'm glad I didn't, because here's what I discovered. I was able to see Joan and hear her story of victory in her book, 90 Days to a Victorious You, and know that it comes out of a lady who was so abused and found victory out of that abuse. Of Rodney, whose story of discovering that although he was such a powerful, dynamic man in the corporate world, that he was broken inside and he needed to have something different. It's so fun for Kathy and I to be able to watch as people's lives transform from becoming best-selling authors, and then they go out into the world and they live abundantly as the best version of themselves because they were able to share their message with people in the world. Just like Joan, just like Rodney, just like so many others, like Makita and Ryan. Becoming best-selling authors is that catalyst, first of all, to help you believe in yourself, but then secondly, to have the authority to be able to go out and say, hey, you know what? As my good friend Carl Michel, who's another one of our best-selling authors, says, you can't just call me Carl Michel. You have to call me international best-selling author, Carl Michel. I want that for you. I want you to be able to live in that thriving place where you too understand that you are uniquely brilliant. You were created for a purpose, and the world needs you. To know that Kathy and I are here to help you live every day of your life as a thriving entrepreneur by, first of all, sharing your story with the world. Please come join us, bestsellersguild.com. It's a free Facebook group. It really, truly is a family. And we would love to have you with us and to begin to help you share your life-altering, world-changing story with the world. Because, as I said, I know that the world needs you, that our world is not as good of a place, cannot be the place that it could be without your unique brilliance in it. So please come join us at bestsellersguild.com, and I encourage you, out of your weakness, right where you are right now today, share your story. Approach reality and live every day of your life as a thriving entrepreneur.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
You've heard Kathy and I talk about it. You've seen the workshops. You have watched as others of your friends have become a best-selling author. And now it's your turn. Let me ask you this. What would being a best-selling author do for your business? Over 80% of people surveyed said that they want to write a book, which means that if you're listening, you probably are one of those people. Now is your time, because you have a message that needs to be shared. That message is not for you. It's not for your ego. It is because it serves other people. Kathy and I are here to help you share your unique brilliance with the world. All you need to do is go to WeHelpYouThrive.com. Check us out and find out how you can be a best-selling author today.